Today's broadcast was originally recorded on December 1st, 2025.
Republicans and their billionaire friends are spending millions trying to save a seat that they should be winning by 20 points. And if we do flip this seat, it will send a national message that we need to get serious about lowering healthcare costs.
Yeah. That's not the only message it'll send. Buckle up.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, way down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Well, we are back after a much-needed week off over the Thanksgiving holiday. I'm hoping that you all had a pleasant and peaceful holiday. Desi Doyen, did you have a pleasant and or peaceful holiday?
Yes, actually pleasant and peaceful.
What?
It was nice to get a bit of a rest from the madness.
Yeah, well,
and the insanity and the tsunami of craziness.
The fun is over. We're back to work, Desiree. Now, had we only been off, over the past weekend, we likely would have had far more than we could possibly catch up on over just one show here today. But having gone the entire week last week out of Dodge, trying to look the other way, well, I suspect it's going to take a few days at least to get our bearings, or perhaps more to the point, given the wildly disturbing U.S. war crimes news over the weekend, to get our sea legs back after Washington Post reported over the holiday weekend that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth had given orders that resulted in survivors of the administration's first unlawful drone strike on purported drug traffickers off the coast of Venezuela back in September being murdered in a second strike against them, which was unlawful under both U.S. and international law, no matter how one tries to couch it. I may have more on that today, or it may have to wait. We will see. Lot to cover, as I said, especially as I'd like to open the phones up while we have a chance today to those in our live Southern California listening area, or those listening anywhere across the globe via our live web stream today at kpfk.org. Our phone number is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. As time allows, if you'd like to help me get caught up today on either anything I may have time to cover or on anything that you feel we need to mention today after our week off. The week already begins with a legal bang as a federal appeals court panel upheld a lower court ruling finding that Donald Trump's appointment of one of his own personal criminal defense attorneys, Alina Haba, as U.S. attorney in New Jersey, is in fact a violation of the law. That ruling follows on another by another one by another lower court last week, finding that Trump's appointment of his personal insurance lawyer, Lindsay Halligan, who has no prosecutorial experience as the U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Virginia, was also, yes, unlawful. And as she was the only DOJ attorney willing to carry out and sign on to a grand jury indictment, plural indictments against two Trump political foes, his former FBI Director James Comey and New York State Attorney General Tish James. Since she was the only one to sign on to those, well, those indictments were summarily dismissed last week in both of the cases, dealing Trump yet another legal blow in his second term revenge presidency. Both rulings by both courts finding Halligan and Haba unlawfully appointed as prosecutors by Donald Trump are likely to make their way to the corrupted activist Republican majority on the U.S. Supreme Court, where, as you probably know by now, anything can happen, whether it's supported by the Constitution or the rule of law or not. So we shall see. But for now, another couple of good rounds of good news from the lower courts for those of us still fighting to protect and defend both the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law. There were several new developments in the ongoing gerrymandering wars around the country while we were gone, as Donald Trump continues to pressure Republican-controlled states to create new U.S. House maps in order to steal seats from Democratic U.S. House members and, most importantly, Democratic voters next year, as he's justifiably concerned that Republicans will get swamped in next year's midterm elections, allowing Democrats to regain a majority in the U.S. House and perhaps stopping Trump's authoritarian agenda dead in his tracks, which sounds like a nice idea to me. Among the developments in the gerrymandering wars while we've been gone over the past week, the corrupted U.S. Supreme Court that I mentioned, well, they temporarily, we'll see how temporary it is, temporarily blocked a lower court that had found that the Texas legislature's mid-decade redistricting meant to try and flip five largely minority House districts from blue to red next year was, in fact, an unlawful racial gerrymander. For now, SCOTUS has put that lower court ruling on hold, allowing Texas Republicans to go ahead and use their new House map, even as the deadline for candidates to register to run next year in any of those districts in Texas. Well, that deadline is just 1 week away on December 8, which is why I suspect the corrupted Supremes are putting a hold on the lower court ruling that actually followed the law in order to allow these new districts to move ahead. Because I'm sure after December 8, they'll say, oh, it's just too late, too close to the election next year. The deadline is already closed to register in order to use a lawful map. In Indiana, where state GOP lawmakers had been refusing to buckle to pressure from the White House to redraw their already very red U.S. House map in order to flip its remaining two democratically held seats from blue to red next year, death threats and at least eight dangerous swatting calls against Republican lawmakers who didn't want to create new maps. Those death threats, those swatting calls, well, they appear to have had their solved their purpose to some extent, in that Republicans did agree to go ahead and meet in a special session this month to at least consider redrawing the U.S. House maps in the Hoosier state, though several GOP lawmakers remain opposed to redrawing the state's maps. We'll see how that works out. And in North Carolina, this was on the night that we actually left for our holiday break, so a little more than a week ago, a panel of federal judges, all Republican appointees, allowed an earlier gerrymander of U.S. House seats in North Carolina. This earlier gerrymander from 2023 was used to take two seats from Democratic voters in 2024. Well, That map, that earlier map, had been challenged in court, and now the federal appeals judges in North Carolina said, no, that map, that gerrymandered map, was just fine. Not unlawful at all. That can remain in place next year. Now that, as Republicans in this very closely divided state, remember, Democrats hold pretty much every single statewide elected position in North Carolina right now. So whenever there's a fair election, the state tends to choose Democrats, at least on the state level. That is as Republicans in that very close state had already gerrymandered it for 2004. Now they have gerrymandered it again to flip one more seat from blue to red next year if they can pull it off. That mid-decade redistricting, that second one, is still under challenge in the lower courts, where a ruling may be forthcoming after judges recently heard the challenge to that additional gerrymander in North Carolina. And, the fierce MAGA stalwart, Marjorie Taylor Greene, you may have heard, Republican of Georgia, while we were off, she announced that she, frustrated with attacks on her by her own party and by Donald Trump himself for daring to disagree with him on a number of issues, most notably that the investigative files on child sex trafficker and longtime Donald Trump best friend Jeffrey Epstein should be publicly released. She announced that she would be resigning from Congress as of January 5. That, by the way, is just 2 days after she is vested with her congressional pension. I'm sure that date was just a coincidence. That will, of course, narrow the Republicans' incredibly thin majority in the U.S. House to just about 2 votes. Now, she may not be the only Republican to call it quits earlier than next year, at least according to reporting by Jake Sherman while we were off. According to his reporting, anyway, at the right-leaning Punch Bowl newsletter, he says that a senior House Republican reportedly warned that Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene's shocking resignation is just the beginning. Quote, "More explosive early resignations are coming," Sherman's anonymous House GOP source said, adding, quote, "It's a tinderbox. Morale has never been lower," the source said, before adding the most explosive part of his or her comments, quote, "Mike Johnson, the speaker, will be stripped of his gavel, and they," Republicans, "will lose their majority before the term is out."
Really? So, wow.
Yeah.
that's
kind of something.
That certainly is. Like rats from a sinking ship.
There you go. If true. Mind
if
you,
true,
an anonymous
well.
Source. Jake Sherman wouldn't make it up, but that source may or may not be correct. The source described here only as a senior House Republican said that the White House was treating GOP lawmakers in Congress, quote, "like garbage," and accused House Speaker Mike Johnson of allowing it to happen. Quote, "The arrogance of this White House team is off-putting to members who are run roughshod and threatened," the person said, adding that rank-and-file members, quote, "are more upset than ever, poor dears." Sherman added an update on social media just hours after posting that original report to say, quote, "Since this ran this morning, I've gotten countless text messages from House Republicans agreeing with this sentiment and saying, why the hell should we stay in Congress if all we're going to do is vote on censures and be a potted plant?" Other Republican figures also see Greene's resignation as a very bad sign for the GOP, with former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy calling Greene, quote, "almost like a canary in the coal mine for the party," telling Fox News that Republicans, quote, "better wake up because they're going to get a lot of people retiring." Yeah. Now, whether they, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, decide to leave before the new term, well, that could be key here because even if they don't, notes Sherman, if Republicans lose just one more member to retirement or death or illness, well, the majority could flip as early as, yes, 2026. What once sounded far-fetched, he observed, now seems increasingly plausible. Is it plausible? Is it really? Yeah, it could be. I welcome your thoughts on this. 818-985-5735. I think it is absolutely plausible, in fact, which makes Tuesday's special election for the U.S. House in Tennessee this week all the more worth watching, as no matter what else is going on this program, as you likely know by now, we keep our eyes on the exercise of democracy, particularly by voters in elections, the very core of our endangered democracy right now, if you ask me, not that you did. And the race on Tuesday this week, no matter how it plays out, no matter who wins the actual seat, is likely to freak out Republicans even more than they may, or at least should, already be freaking out at this point. Progressive Democrat Afton Bain and Republican Matt Van Epps are now reportedly polling neck and neck in the Tennessee special election to replace former Republican Congressman Mark Green, according to a new poll last week, as this week's election day neared and as early voting was already underway. Green resigned earlier this year, not long after being reelected for some reason, in order to take a job in the private sector. But an Emerson College polling survey, along with The Hill, released last Wednesday, showed Van Epps, the former commissioner of the Tennessee Department of General Services, at close to 48% of the vote in support, according to the poll. And the Democrat here, Bain, a state rep, at 46%, just under 2 points behind among likely voters and voters who have already voted. Close to 5% said last week that they were still undecided. So 48 to 46, according to the polling, 5% still undecided. Now, when Emerson factored in the undecideds in their polling, based on which candidate the undecided said that they were leaning toward, well, in that case, Van Epps, the Republican, sits at 49%, with Bain sitting at 47%. In what is, yes, clearly now a neck-and-neck race, even if that is still a two-point advantage for the Republican. But this district, the 7th Congressional District in Tennessee, which stretches between the state's northern border with Kentucky and its southern border with Alabama and includes portions of North and West Nashville. Thus, it covers urban, suburban, and rural areas of the state, pretty representative of Tennessee. Well, it is heavily Republican. In fact, this district went for Donald Trump last November by 22 points. Now, it is, if the Emerson poll is even close to correct, a two-point race. 22 points in Trump's favor last year, just 2 points now in favor of the Republicans, as voters are voting on Tuesday in Tennessee. Democrats have been pouring money into this race, into what they see as a bellwether, obviously, for next year's election, but if the unthinkable were to happen here and Bain somehow won this election on Tuesday, it would result in Republicans having just a one-seat advantage for votes in the House after Marjorie Taylor Greene leaves at the beginning of January. And as that unnamed senior congressional Republican told Punchbowl, puts the speakership of Republican Mike Johnson on even shakier grounds than it already is. Quote, the special election in Tennessee's 7th district will come down to what groups are motivated to turn out on election day and who stays home, said Spencer Kimball, executive director of Emerson College Polling, stating the obvious in a press release before adding, quote, those who report voting early break for Bain, the Democrat, 57 to 42. So that's 14 points in the Democrats' favor. Those who plan to vote on Election Day, however, break for the Republican Van Epps, 51 to 39. That's about 12 points, he said. So, anyone's guess here. Emerson's results, if accurate, show, in fact, that the race has significantly tightened since mid-October. The momentum is with Afton Bain.
And so is a lot of money. But remember, there's also the Republican Party and their billionaire donors and all of their right-wing groups that like to donate as well.
And they're cheating.
It's a surge of money, yes.
Yeah, as a lot of money. A lot of money on both sides here. Democrats are going all in for this because they think they might actually be able to win this. But as I say, the momentum is with the Democrat, Afton Bain. Two public polls showed Van Epps leading by 8% and 10%, respectively, in mid-October. So this race has significantly tightened since then. Now the Republican leads by just 2 points as of last week. Even if Bain, by the way, were to end up losing here by, you know, a few points in a district that Trump won by 22 points last year, well, that would certainly be a sign of big trouble for Republicans next year and perhaps another round of early retirements to come after that special election in the bargain.
There could be some big changes ahead.
Could be. So far this year, we have seen an average of about a 15-point shift among voters from votes support for Republicans to support for Democrats in special election after special election, with numbers very similar to that in this year's off-year elections held in early November, when Democrats won just about everything everywhere, as we reported at the time in, frankly, the most Democratic-leaning results in state after state after state that I actually recall ever seeing in my more than 20 years now of reporting on these things. Everywhere I looked, every race I checked, it was Democrats winning. Now, among those races, of course, was Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani's win for mayor in New York City, where, despite incredibly well-funded attacks against him from both Republicans and Democrats, he ended up winning in a rout over both former Democratic governor turned independent Andrew Cuomo and Republican Curtis Sliwa. Now, of course, we covered his huge win at the time, along with big victories for Democratic gubernatorial races in New Jersey and Virginia Democrats' rout of Republicans in the state's House of Delegates to regain a 28-seat supermajority in the House of Delegates. We also covered a number of less highlighted races around the country where Democrats also won in state after state. But with a few weeks to sort of add up all of the numbers in a bunch of, let's call them, hyper-local races across the state of New York, well, it becomes clear that the Democratic rout a month ago was even deeper than initially reported last month, with Mamdani's victory in New York City being merely the tip of the iceberg in a state where U.S. House elections will be critical next year to who wins majority control of the lower chamber. Across suburbs, supposedly red rural counties and small towns in New York, according to Politico last week, Democrats posted electoral gains that rival and in many cases surpass the party's 2017 so-called blue wave in an off-year election at the time. That in the wake of Trump's first term of office, that was called a blue wave. In a state with enough competitive House races right now to decide control of the chamber all by itself next year, the outcome in New York, Politico argues, amounts to a wake-up call for already wary Republicans. Well, no need to wake them up. New York Democrats once viewed the 2017 elections as among their best ever. The blue wave that year, notes Politico, was driven by purple suburbs, making a hard shift to the left back in 2017 during Trump's first year in office. This year, however, in New York, that tilt was felt even more widely, with Democrats in every corner of the state pointing to economic uncertainty exacerbated by Trump's policies as voters' top concern in race after race. Much of the early narrative from this fall's elections has cast Democrats' gains as occurring mostly in places where they often win, notes Politico. Now, you probably heard folks like Mike Johnson after Election Day dismissing the November results as no big deal. They were expected. Democrats, you know, winning in blue states, no surprise. But Politico's examination of every race on the ballot in New York, where there are some very red districts, in fact, but the examination of every race on the ballot in New York on November 4 shows that the shift towards the Democrats was far more widespread than originally thought, with Democrats having their best ever performance in numerous deep red towns and rural areas. This year's contests, the outlet notes, offered very little solace for Republicans as they prepped for 7 battleground congressional races in New York alone. That's why I say there are enough seats in New York, to flip the House all by itself, and a gubernatorial election next year in which they'd hoped to build on the rightward, in which Republicans had hoped to build on the rightward momentum from 2022 and 2024. That momentum appears now to be all but gone. A Politico review of results in 268 county, town, and village executive branch races found an average 10-point shift towards the towards the Democrats, a 10-point increase in the Democratic margin as an average in 268 different races. Democrats made gains in at least 18 different county legislative bodies in November. They flipped over 50 seats across the Empire State. And yes, in very red Republican counties, for example, they gained 5 seats in Oswego County, which Trump won last year by 27 points. And yet the Democrats picked up 5 seats last month. They picked up 5 in Ulster County by making inroads in towns that have been Republican for generations, winning their largest majority in county history there in Ulster. And they flipped 5 in Onondaga and gained their first majority there since the 1970s. So, yeah, you know, you hear Republicans after that election. Well, no surprise, of course, they were Democratic states. Democrats won. No surprise. Well, look a little closer. And yes, it was quite a surprise. For Republicans, on the other hand, last month, the outcome was painted a bleak picture, says Politico. GOP candidates flipped 1 county legislative seat in the entire state. They flipped 1. Compare that to Democrats flipping 50 seats. This November was only the second time since 1989 that Democrats won mayoral races in each of the state's 5 largest cities, including Syracuse and Buffalo. And as Mamdani received more votes than any Democratic nominee in New York City since at least 1965. And that should be notable, if only because the attack ads against Mamdani in New York City, they were brutal, and they played like crazy throughout the election. But it wasn't just in New York City, because in a lot of cities, towns, counties, and so forth around New York City, those folks saw those ads as well. Many of them carry New York City stations locally. And yet, those attack ads against Mamdani, that he's a socialist, he's a communist, he's a jihadist, I mean, the worst they could throw at them, those ads were saw by a lot of folks across the state of New York. And guess what? It seems to have helped to increase turnout for Democrats last month. Go figure. Voters are looking, quote, for leadership that kind of ignores traditional party stances, said Lebanon's supervisor-elect Adam Carvel. He received 63% of the vote as a Democrat in that race in a town where Trump received 60% of the vote last year.
Now, this raises to mind for me whether or not Mom Donnie, because, you know, the New York stations, as you mentioned, played, you know, his ads and the attacks against him, if Mom Donnie himself would be a part of driving turnout in these lower down ballot races in the region around Greater New York City.
Well, heck yeah. And for a number of reasons, at least if you ask me, for a number of reasons, I think that, well, people hate Trump for a start everywhere. They just hate him. So you're going to see Democrats do well in an off-year election. But the attacks on Mom Donnie, who was incredibly likable, and, you know, seeing him out there campaigning compared to these attack ads against him, it just didn't make any sense. It was clear they weren't telling the truth about this guy. Even Donald Trump ended up figuring that out. Again, while we were off for the holidays, Mom Donnie requested a meeting with Trump at the White House. Trump ended up basically, I don't know how to put it,
complimenting him.
There you go.
Like they were new best buds.
Yes.
I mean, I think that it brings to a point something you've been saying for a while now. Give people something to vote for.
For,
not just against, which, of course, there's plenty to vote against.
Yeah.
So giving them something to vote for does help turn out, even when Mom Donnie was not on the ballot locally.
Yeah. I think there was a response to that. I think people just don't like this. They don't like this kind of attack on a Democratic candidate that is clearly ridiculous. And they liked the so-called Democratic socialist programs that Mom Donnie was offering. And that was reflected in New York City and, I think, across the state. All told, there were 118 municipal executive races outside of New York City this year that were contested in either 2021 or 2023, the last two off-year elections. The number of ballots that were cast for Democrats grew from 1.3 million to 1.6 million, a 22% increase in those races this year. The Democratic gains were ultimately much broader than those back in 2017. The last time it was the first year of a Donald Trump presidency, the following year after that, again, considered a blue wave, the following year in 2018, New York Democrats ended up flipping three congressional seats. Now, there are at least seven in the state that are considered to be competitive in New York next year. So make of that what you will. While I would be stunned by a Democratic victory in Tennessee this week, frankly, anything could happen at this point. But whether she wins, Afton Bain, whether she wins or loses, keep an eye on how well Bain does in that special election in the Trump plus 22 district on Tuesday. That should give all of us an idea of the state of American democracy and the eagerness of voters everywhere to push back against the way it is being undermined, the way democracy is being undermined by this current dreadful authoritarian administration and its wannabe dictator. You may want to be a dictator, but the voters may have other ideas about that. If, of course, they are allowed to vote, we will be keeping our eyes on that as well. In Tuesday's U.S. House special election in Tennessee. So, got anything you'd like to catch up with on after this past week, or that you'd like to ask me about, or challenge me on, or anything else? I'd love to hear from you. If so, if you are in our live Southern California listening area, or you're listening anywhere around the world live via our kpfk.org web stream, give me a call at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Of course, if you're not listening live, you can still chime in, drop me some email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. Yes, there is a lot of terrible stuff going on. A lot of people are being hurt. Families are being separated. Healthcare costs are skyrocketing under the administration after the Trump Republicans' huge cuts that finally begin to kick in beginning January 1. The rule of law is being wildly corruptive. corrupted. The felony criminal charges against Donald Trump and 18 co-conspirators down in Georgia who unsuccessfully tried to steal the 2020 election in that state. Those charges were dropped while we were gone by a state-appointed prosecutor in the Peach State for no good reason, to be frank. But there remains reason to stay hopeful and keeping our eyes on the prize. It's certainly possible, I suppose, at some point that a quickly aging Donald Trump could drop dead at any moment, or that more Republicans could begin turning on him. We have already begun seeing some of that in Congress, as bipartisan committees in both chambers of Congress are now said to be investigating the apparent war crimes by the U.S. military in the Caribbean this week. The attacks began on September 2, but now suddenly Republicans in Congress are willing to, put a check perhaps on this administration, at least by beginning investigations after reports that survivors from the initial attack on supposed drug runners in boats in the Caribbean were ordered to be killed in a second incredibly unlawful attack following the first one on September 2nd that was already unlawful but left two survivors clinging for their lives, clinging to the wreckage when they were hit a second time. Wildly unlawful. Period. U.S. law, international law, military law, everything else. You don't shoot survivors after an attack. But with all that said, the most likely rollback of Donald Trump's attempt to seize more power than allowed by the Constitution is going to come from voters next year at the ballot box. At least that's how I see it. How about you? 818-985-5735 if you'd like to talk about that or anything else. If not, I still got more to catch you up on, but that's what the rest of the week's broadcast is for, so I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call at 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is the broadcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
There ought to be. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. I want to get right to your calls at 818-985-5735. I will note that while we were off last week, a unanimous three-judge panel of the conservative 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, three-judge panel including a George W. Bush-appointed judge and a Donald Trump-appointed judge. That three-judge panel unanimously upheld a $1 million sanction against Donald Trump and his attorney, Alina Habba, for filing a frivolous lawsuit against Hillary Clinton and former FBI Director James Comey. That means that in theory, Donald Trump will have to write a $1 million check to Hillary Clinton for his ridiculous lawsuit that was tossed out by the court, claiming that she was trying to steal the election somehow back in 2016 by paying for Oppo research regarding Trump and Russia, research that she never actually released before the election in question. So unclear how she was trying to steal the election. But, you know, don't have to be facts behind a Donald Trump lawsuit. And Alina Habba, his personal defense lawyer, she's been named as U.S. attorney in New Jersey. As I noted at the top of the show, she has been found by a separate appeals court on Monday to have been appointed unlawfully by Trump to that role because he couldn't give a damn about following any laws that he does not like. Now we just wait for the corrupt Republican Supreme Court majority to make up a reason to toss out the federal judge's ruling on the $1 million judgment against him and on the separate federal panel's ruling on Monday that Haba is illegally serving as U.S. attorney in New Jersey. Too cynical? 818-985-5735. Let's go to G in Glendale. Hey, G, welcome to the broadcast.
Hello?
Oh, hello, G. Turn down your radio, sir, if you don't mind.
No problem. 3 seconds.
Okay, take your time. Okay. Sounds good, G. You got it turned down, buddy?
Mr. Okay. Bradley Lewis Friedman, the reason we have it sometimes louder is because since you guys moved to Jewel City from NoHo, we can hardly barely hear you when we call in. We can hear the call screeners, but not you guys. That's why we have it a little louder. Okay.
Okay.
Main topic of calling is John Castamides from your repeat show last week, but then you mentioned Alina Haba.
Yeah.
So I'm going to riff on that, and then you can riff on whatever you
think. Well, you know what? Riff on the best one first. We got a lot of people trying to get into us, G. Go ahead.
What's that?
Just go ahead.
Okay, before I do, though, a shout goes out to the great Carlos from Carson, and happy belated birthday to Mo from Long Beach and the Inglewood. Okay, you mentioned Alina Haba. There's another person we got to keep an eye on. Last month on the news, I heard that we're trying to get him out of there. I'm talking about another sellout, and you can riff on this. Is our friend Bilal Ali from next door in Riverside County. His real name is Bilal Ali Isalian, but they call him so-called Bill Isali, who's evidently overstayed his welcome. He's in there illegally.
Correct. Hang on, G. He's not even going to listen, is he? I just wanted to say that. But, no, is he still going? Yeah. G. Whatever. We'll come back to G another time. 818-985-5735. You know, when you call in, I'd love to hear whatever you have to say, but it's a conversation. Good Lord. Is he still going? Here, turn him up a little bit. Is he still talking?
Yeah, I don't know if you're aware of this. You mentioned that...
Okay, turn him back down again. So we'll check in from G from time to time and see if he's noticed that we're not talking to him. Let's go to Cole in Huntington Beach. Hey, Cole, welcome to the broadcast. There's G. Hi, G. All right. Hey, Cole, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hey, Cole. All right. We may tap into G every now and again as we go, but what's on your mind, Cole?
Well, you know, a lot of these things that the Trump administration does, appointing lawyers that don't qualify, bombing people, bombing the boat twice, they're so ignorant of what the laws are.
Yep.
They get themselves in all kinds of trouble because they're totally out of place. I mean, Hegseth is a television announcer. Trump is a con man. These guys have no qualifications to be where they are, and we're going to see more of that until we actually impeach them.
Cole, are they ignorant of those laws, or do they not give a damn about those laws?
Well, I think they're ignorant, and they just go ahead and act, and then they find out later, oh, yeah, uh-huh. But then they don't care.
Well, it's hard to say. It's hard to say that is the case, certainly with this with these attacks in the Caribbean, because NBC reported, it was just before we left town a little over a week ago, that in fact the top lawyer, the top military lawyer overseeing that region where these bombings are happening, warned the Pentagon, warned Pete Hegseth that this is in fact unlawful, and he did it anyway. So
you're right.
You're almost giving them too much credit to say that they're so ignorant. I don't think they're ignorant. I think they know exactly what they're doing. I think they know they're violating the law. I think they don't care.
Wow. Well, I wonder if they're going to care when they're in the jury box, in the docket. Because they should go to court. We should actually, you know, try them on war crimes.
Yeah. And what happens when Donald Trump pardons them all before he leaves office? Unless, as I mentioned in the previous block, he just drops dead out of nowhere. But if he doesn't, and if he gives them all pardons, who's going to prosecute him then?
The International Law Court.
sounds good to me, but good luck getting them into court. Now I sound like the people that I'm saying, don't be cynical. Keep fighting the good fight here, no matter the odds against you. Listen, Cole, I hope you're right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate the call. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. Did we lose Cole, or is he still going on and on? No. Okay.
Oh, you mean G?
I'm sorry. G. Yeah.
Hold.
G.
Oh, G's so on he's hold. On hold on the line five. If you want to try him.
Well, we'll think about it. Let me go to Harold in Santa Barbara. Hey, Harold. Welcome to the broadcast.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, quit being so cynical and dump the Trump.
Dump the Trump?
Yes.
Okay. How does what do you mean cynical? How am I cynical?
Well, you're trying to say that they're totally ignoring the law. Now, how could the president of the United States ignore the law? Uh-oh, that was cynical, wasn't it?
Well, I would just say that the President of the United States is now allowed to ignore the law. That's the problem, because we have a corrupt Supreme Court that basically July of 2024 said, in fact, a President of the United States... Oh, can you turn him down? Turn them down a little bit there for a second. A president of the United States can, in fact, even send out SEAL Team 6 to assassinate his political opponents. They said that a president can violate the law anytime a president feels like it. So, you know, Harold, that's what we got.
You're absolutely perfect and correct, and I might even send you a box of chocolates.
Uh-oh. I'm going to have to have Desi taste them first. Thanks, Harold. I appreciate the call. 818-985-5735. I hope to talk more about those boat strikes in the days ahead. But I'm curious if we've got, and I don't know if we can get them in time at this point. I'd love to hear from some veterans out there. Or even active duty members, how you feel about these boat strikes, how you feel about fascinating that just over a week ago, before we left for our break, we were talking about these six U.S. Senators and members of Congress, all of them veterans of the armed forces or the intelligence services, who were telling people in a video, do not follow illegal laws. And the Republicans pretended to be furious about this. Oh, what illegal laws are they talking about? They're telling them to violate lawful orders. No, they're talking about illegal orders. But then the comeback was, well, okay, but what illegal orders? He hasn't given any illegal orders. Take a look at what just happened in the Caribbean. Are you kidding me? There are two survivors. This is, you know, maritime law going back centuries, man. You save people when they are in the water fighting for their lives. So give me a break. Anyway, 818-985-5735. Should Senator Kelly, Mark Kelly, decorated veteran astronaut, should he be court-martialed? That's what the Trump administration is trying to do. Really? After Pete Hegseth gave the orders that ended up killing two survivors of an attack? Anyway, let me get back. Sorry. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Brad. Tom in Thousand Oaks, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. What's on your mind, Tom?
Well, I was just going to say that the commanders of those ships, the captains of those ships, they know the law.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. And
that's
by the way,
all I want.
Yeah, and we don't know if they were ships or helicopters or drones or whatever, but yeah, they know the law, and they, I'm hoping, are going to be in big, big trouble. Of course, I suspect, as I said, Donald Trump will pardon them all. Thanks for the call, Tom. Thanks for the thought. Appreciate it. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Maisie in downtown L.A. Hey, Maisie, welcome to the broadcast.
Brad, how are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you, Maisie?
Yeah, I'm well, thanks. I've just had a long journey. I thought I'd give you a call. I've always listened.
Oh.
You know, I just wanted to say, you know, I feel like this late stage capitalism, I keep trying to tell myself that these are the death throes of an ideology, which is a temporary thing, because everything's temporary. And I just wanted to think about solutions for a second. I just feel like, you know, these are boys in their mind. You know, they are fear-based. They are not love-based. And I just feel like love and peace and joy and the timeless qualities of being human are revolutionary. They're not cliches. And until we have an economic system and a political system that really enhances, that takes those qualities, you know, in mind and at heart, we're not going to get anywhere. And, you know, I'm an American citizen, but I'm a British citizen, so I'm very aware of the fact that, you know, it's rich white men that created this ideology, this capitalist ideology, which I think is exploitative. By definition, I think it's exploitative in its heart. There's always a winner and a loser. There's always this disconnect of, like, you are less than me, and this hierarchy, which is fundamentally patriarchal. Sorry, but, you know, this is what I feel and I see, and I'm just feeling like there is a solution if we just hold together. Like, we can get through this time if these little fear-based boys lashing out, thinking that they're entitled to, like, blow up people in the middle of the ocean for more greed and more power. There is enough to go around. We're living, you know, this whole system is based in, like, lack and limitation. But the truth is, this is a beautiful planet, and there's enough to go around, brother. And I just felt like I wanted to say that, and
Thank you, Maisie.
Say mad love to you and your show.
Thank you, Maisie.
And if you had any reflections, you know, if you had reflection on that, I would love to hear.
My reflection, you don't have to hang up on yourself, Maisie. We'll turn you down for a second. But my reflection is that love, peace, joy, the quality of being alive as a human being, if that's what you said, I'm all in favor of all of those, plus voting. I just got to throw it in there. That, I continue to say, is our way out. Now, I know that you think, even if everybody votes the way it would be nice if they did, that we are still going to be in trouble. And I would agree. Yes, that's the case. But you know, when you're drowning, when you're clinging to the lifeboat for dear life, sometimes just getting back in the boat is a good idea if you can, and try to figure out how to save yourself from there. That's my thought, Maisie. By the way,
voting 100%. We should all be voting. I totally agree with that, because I believe in the power of the people. You know, I mean, I'm from a first world country too, but I choose to live here because this is where the frontier of human evolution is happening. This is where the advanced diversity is happening. This is the most, you know, where you're forced to listen if you want to, if you want to stay open. You can listen and hear and learn from all these different perspectives. So in a true democracy, people need to be informed to be able to have critical thinking skills, to be able to discern what is truthful and what is not truthful. And I have to say that, having worked in the education system, I'm really, you can get the best education in the world here if you can pay for it. But having been to 48 states, you find yourself in some deep red state. You don't have... the ability, because you don't have the schooling to be able to discern what's right and wrong, and that is when democracy dies.
Maisie,
cannot.
You're great. And I agree with everything. And I'm only cutting you off in that we're coming close to the top of the hour. I got a few other folks that I want to get to. But you're great. Feel free to give us a call back anytime. Somebody needs to get Maisie a show. She. I would ask.
What's up? Thank you, Brad.
There you go. Talk to you. Love you, too. 818. Oh, I don't even have time. Let me get to Chris in Sherman Oaks. Hey, Chris. Welcome to the broadcast.
Brad?
Yes, Chris.
Hi. Huh? Just wanted to give you another ray of hope.
Okay.
There was an article in the LA Times that said voters in Kentucky were calling the Secretary of State to find out why the polls were closed, because they wanted to vote for Mamdani.
Well,
and other places as well. So if people are that aware and that desperate for those policies, I hope the politicians are hearing that.
Well,
you know, I just,
Chris, I think you told the best possible version of that story, because that's not exactly how I heard it. But I like your version better. But what I heard is that, in fact, they were calling the Secretary of State's office because they were furious because they couldn't vote. I didn't hear that they were furious they couldn't vote for Mamdani.
Yeah, that's the impression I got, and not just in Kentucky, other places too.
Well, I think what the Secretary of State said at the time was that, you can't, your polling place is closed today because we're not holding votes in Kentucky today, so you can't vote for Mamdani. You're right. He might have suggested that they were that they wanted to vote for Mom Donnie.
That's the way I thought I read
like,
it.
Let's anyway. Listen to it that way. Let's hear it that way. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks to you.
I appreciate
you.
It.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Let me go to, who do I got? I got Mark in, Mark in Los Angeles. Did I do it right or did I hang up on him? You think I would learn how to. Mark, are you there? Did I screw it up? Call us back, Mark, quick. 818-985-5735. Is G still hanging on? Hey, G, are you still there? Are you still talking?
How are you?
I thought so. Okay. All righty there. Let me do it. Let me try. Oh, Chris, we've had. All right. Well, then it's that time of day. It's the time that we get to Mo in Long Beach. Hey, Mo. Good to hear from you, brother. Hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. You doing well?
I not only had a happy Thanksgiving, I had a marvelous Thanksgiving, Ben. Wow. I sure hope you have too. But let me tell you something. America, we're going to be okay. There's pushback on the on Trump regime. Courts are starting to push back on him. The military is starting to push back on him. I'm digging what Elisa Slotkin said. Remember her, the former CIA agent? Yeah. I think she's a senator right now.
Yeah.
I think she carries a gun, Bradley. Okay, people are pushing back
on
this guy.
Wait, wait, wait. Mo, you think she does what?
I think she carries a gun.
Oh, so that she carries a gun. Okay, well, she probably does now after that video and everybody targeted her pretending that she said something that she didn't say. So, yeah.
Well, anyway, there's pushback. So I want everybody to keep your hope, keep hope alive. Seriously, there's pushback on this guy right now. He's decimated the economy. He doesn't have a friend in the world. He goes, nope, he's a lame duck president. So we're going to be okay. I'm appreciative that the courts are pushing back, our politicians are pushing back, and the Republicans are waking up and smelling the caffeine because he doesn't care about them either, and they know it. Behave yourself, Bradley.
Thank you, brother. Always great to hear from you. As a matter of fact, I had a call, an emailer about a week or so ago who said she loves the show. She tunes in. She always tries to catch it on Mondays when Mo is on the show. So you got fans out there, brother. All right, I think we got to get out. Listen. You know, I've been going back and forth with a friend of mine who loves to say that. Oh. People are getting too positive. They're thinking, oh, we're, Donald Trump is going to collapse. His regime is going to collapse any minute. I don't think that's the case. I think he's going to be around for a while. But do you hit him when he's down? Yes, you do. Because every time he is held up to ridicule for what he is doing, every time he is held accountable for what he is doing, it chips away at his power, the power that he thinks he has and the power that he actually does have. And that's our job. I think, in a democracy, is to push back as long as he's not yet that dictator that he would like to be. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for helping us get caught up and back on this highway of love that we do every day here on the broadcast. Great to hear from you. Thank you. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, thanks to you. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our soundboard operator, Wendell Handy. And for everyone out there spending a portion of your day or night with us, if you missed any portion of today's show or any other we have ever done since the beginning of time, download them for free anytime at bradblog.com. You can drop me an email on bradcast@bradblog.com. And you can find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. See you there until we see you here again. Hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.